Anya and Lestari walked together through darkened palace corridors. Lamps at the bases of the walls cast amber fans of light upward, past the plants in their copper pots and shadowed niches. Tonight, the Sufi woman wore royal blue, with a sapphire in her navel.
"We've received a communication from the Red Hand."
"What did they say?"
"I'll leave that for His Majesty to tell you."
Lestari maintained her usual manner, which somehow contrived to be at once sultry and deadpan. Anya could never shake the impression the woman was laughing at her on the inside. She felt a strange, nerdish urge to find some way to let her know she was in on the joke. But she could not, especially since she wasn't. At the foot of the stairs, Lestari paused and draped a bare arm over a banister. Everything she did looked as if she was posing for a classic Greek sculpture. Her ability to exude sexiness without apparently trying, like her air of superiority, infuriated Anya.
"You'll find the Sultan awaiting you in his study. It's to your left, at the top of the stairs, down two doors. I leave you here. But before I do, I have a question. What do you intend in regard to the Sultan?"
"I really don't see what business that is of yours."
"It may be, and it may not. That remains to be seen. I did not ask the question in order for you to answer it to me. I asked it in order for you to answer it for yourself. Good evening."
She turned and glided past Anya, back along the amber-lit hallway. She moved lightly, as if her slippered feet did not touch the floor tiles.
"The worst thing is that she's right. I do need to ask myself that."
Anya had spent a lot of time in the Sultan's company the last few days. Even if most of it entailed little more than sitting in his office, leafing fruitlessly through volumes from the palace's vast libraries, or flipping through endless pages of internet printouts while he read reports off the thin plasma screen that rose up out of his desktop on his command. He also muttered earnestly on his phone, issuing the occasional command, questioning constantly. She could never help feeling his presence, like a warm stove in a cold room. Even away from the palace, walking clean streets between whitewashed downtown walls, past construction sites where the last of the tsunami damage was being repaired, or sitting in her room reading her email, she kept seeing his face. Even doing her workouts, his face or voice popped into her mind. She reminded herself sternly that she was just a commoner. She hated thinking of herself in those terms, yet like most Americans, she found herself fascinated by the concept of royalty and nobility. Even though as an antiquarian, she knew better than most the foibles of the highborn.
"Come."
Anya had stepped into a room with a high-domed ceiling, patterned with intricate looping knots and interlocked rectangles like the floor tiles. The walls were lined with bookshelves.
"Miss Creed, what a pleasure to see you."
Where are you?"
"Up here, Anya."
An old-fashioned mobile ladder on casters stood to her right, attached to a rail that ran around the top of the wall. Wira, dressed in green trousers and a loose white shirt, with the sleeves rolled up his hard brown forearms, perched at the top of it. He climbed down.
"Are you all right? Your cheeks, you aren't feverish, are you?"
"Just a touch of sun, that's all."
"Be careful. Our tropical sun can be hard on fair skin such as yours." "Listen to me, I sound like Krishna, who sounds just like Polonius most of the time. As if you, the globe-trotting adventurer, need me to warn you about the sun."
"Your concern is always appreciated, Your Majesty."
"There's a time for formality, I know, but I hope that time has passed for us. I dare to think we have become colleagues, and maybe on our way to becoming friends. I'd be honored if you simply call me Wira. Except when Krishna is around, it'll make him crazy."
"You? Honored? The honor's mine, Wira. But please, call me Anya, you... Wira."
Wira smiled and squeezed Anya's hand. For a wild, heart-pounding moment, she was sure he was about to lean forward and kiss her. Instead, he let go of her and raised his head.
"Gentlemen, our guest has arrived. Please join me in the study."
She looked at him, puzzled. Inside, she was trying to sort out whether she was disappointed or relieved, or maybe why she was both. He caught her eye, grinned, and shrugged.
"Wait, your people bug your own quarters?"
"Palace security. They'll do it no matter how sternly I order them not to. So I make use of it. It's handier than an intercom, and I hate walking around with a headset on all the time or something stuck in my ear.
Purnoma and Colonel Singh came in, the Sikh looking tall and grave and splendid as always, with his beard oiled and upcurled at the bottom, and Purnoma dressed as if he was either a cat burglar or heading out for a little midnight basketball when they were done. She wouldn't put either past him.
Gentlemen?
The two men returned Anya's greeting in their usual ways, Singh nodding gravely and Purnoma with his usual grin.
We've heard from the pirates through an intermediary. The usual channels through which ransom demands are delivered, you understand?
I have some idea how business is done in such cases.
Everyone speaks of never negotiating with these pirate scum, but everyone does it, even ourselves.
Speaking of terrorists, I've been wondering, could the pirates be working with the Sword of the Faith?
If anything, they hate each other more than they hate us. Like any purists, the Sword of the Faith are prudes, deeply conservative. And like many terrorist movements around the world, they try to gain popular support by crushing more conventional criminals.
So the pirates want to sell the relic to you?
They're giving us an exclusive opportunity to bid before they put it up for open auction.
Including the Sword of the Faith. Greed makes strange bedfellows, just like fanaticism.
Where are the pirates now?
For some inexplicable reason, Anya was starting to get a cold, creeping sensation in the muscles of her cheeks and down her lower spine. The domed room was dominated by a large, low table with eight sides. Its top surface gleamed like polished mahogany, causing Anya to suspect it was a reading table, or perhaps for gaming. Wira pressed an almost invisible button on the side closest to him. The tabletop revealed itself as a circular, high-definition screen showing a map.
Nice techno toy.
Useful, too.
Thanks to your giving us the frequency for your GPS tracker, Miss Creed, we've located them in the Sulu Sea. Overhead imaging shows a substantial junk fleet gathered there at anchor.
Aren't they making a conspicuous target of themselves?
They are, unfortunately, in Philippine territorial waters.
And you can't strike at them without causing a nasty international incident?
And there you have it.
Anya frowned down at the map. A set of little red ship figures showed the pirate fleet's location.
I don't suppose you could get the Philippine government's permission to hit them.
We don't dare.
Eddie Kalkar would get a request before the Philippine foreign minister did, courtesy of his paid traitors.
Who plague us in abundance.
Minister Purnoma is highly effective at rooting them out.
Indeed I am. But still, it does no good. They're like roaches. They just keep breeding in dark, moist, smelly places. Maybe I'm just confessing to my own incompetence.
Not at all, Minister Purnoma. We have to face reality, no matter how unpleasant.
Well, I guess that's my cue to ask why you gentlemen have invited me here to tell me this. I don't have such an exalted opinion of myself to think you'd seriously consult me concerning Rimba Parak Affairs Estate.
Don't sell yourself short, Anya. You've displayed remarkable gifts.
Listen, Miss Creed. You yourself seem to have a gift for turning up, whether you're wanted or not. And being pretty hard to kill. Apologies for implicitly comparing you to pirates. What I'm saying is, if you're not an operator, you should be. I'd like to offer you a job.
I'm flattered, Mr. Purnoma, but surely you don't believe I'm somebody's intelligence agent.
I don't.
I don't know what you are, exactly, but I don't think you're a threat to the Sultan or the state. Everything beyond that is just idle curiosity.
I don't want to be rude, but I still wonder why you took the trouble to call me here tonight. I have a feeling it's important.
The three men traded glances. She had the impression they were uneasy in her presence. That was odd for three such powerful men. And in this small nation, their power was functionally absolute. As warmly friendly as Wira was, as cheerful as Purnoma was, as unfailingly polite as Singh was, the Sultan was an absolute ruler. And the others were his left hand and his right. They were hard hands indeed, Anya had no doubt.
I have come to a decision. It pertains to your area of expertise and your own involvement in this affair. My advisors concur.
What's the bad news then? You don't mean...
Whatever the nature of this relic the Red Hand has stolen, we all agree it has enormous potential to do harm. As a symbol of enormous power, if nothing else. Even your knights admitted it could contain a secret that might conceivably overturn the order of the world.
Well, that's highly speculative.
Yes, but the order of the world, such as it is already balanced on a dagger's tip. Tensions run high. Rivalries between great powers that once seemed extinguished forever are now at least flickering alight again. And no one knows for sure who might have nuclear weapons, nor where. We cannot afford to let the coffin fall into the wrong hands. Nor, for that matter, to permit it to stay long in the hands of Eddie Kaukau.
You can't!
We hope not to.
As a last resort, Miss Creed, we are prepared to sink the entire pirate fleet and send the relic to the bottom of the sea, if not blow it to pieces.
I can't believe you're even thinking of this.
We only consider it because the alternative might be even more unthinkable.
Relax, Miss Creed. We are not launching yet. You are about to remind us we couldn't attack the pirates in Philippine waters anyway, am I right? And as the Colonel says, it's a last resort. Somebody as clever as you are ought to be able to help us find a way to avoid it coming to that.
You really think so?
We do. You not only got into one of my ships, you got off it again, bringing with you a badly wounded man in the midst of a pirate attack. That was quite an achievement.
She still wanted to rage, to demand, to plead, to force them to promise to preserve the coffin at all costs. She knew how much good it would do.
All right. I'll come up with something. Thanks for giving me the chance.
And one more thing.
Yes?
In light of the fact that the Red Hand has made their first move, and in light of the attempt on your life, I have decided to move you into the palace for the duration of our contract. I've taken the liberty of having your possessions transferred from your hotel. I trust you'll find your quarters here satisfactory. If not, I'm sure we can find a way to accommodate you.
I'm sure I've been in worse places. Thanks for your concern, Your Majesty.